Oh, bonjour, je m'appelle Morgane Cyprès.
Hi, this is Vanessa James.
Hi, I'm Mariah Nagasu.
I'm Alexa Kinnearum.
And Chris Kinnearum.
Hey, this is Karen Chen.
Hey everyone, it's Brady Tennell.
Hi, this is Brooke Castile, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Hi everyone, it is episode 66 of Ice Talk. I'm Jackie Wong of RockerSkating.com. For the past couple of weeks, Nick McCarville and I have been reminiscing about the Olympics, and that's all fine and dandy, but we still have one more big competition left to go this season. The World Championships start next week in Milan, Italy, and so now that we've had a few weeks to recover from the Olympics, it's time to set our sights on Worlds. I'm going to be talking to Caitlin Osmond later on in this episode, but I'm going to jump right into it with Brooke Castile, who is back to help me preview some of the competition at the World Championships next week. Hey, Brooke.
Hey, how's it going? I'm still not recovered from the Olympics. My clock is all off. I go to bed like at 1 a.m. every night now. I got used to that schedule.
I know, right? I'm sure as someone on the East Coast of the United States, that can be a bit of a crazy schedule.
Yes, it was.
I'm going to roll right into the ladies event first because we had some breaking news today. Defending champion and Olympic silver medalist Yevgenia Medvedeva is out. She is once again dealing with that foot injury that took her out of a good chunk of this season. So with her withdrawal, it means that none of the four 2017 world champions will be defending their titles this week. Next week, I guess. But let's start here, Brooke. What do you think Yevgenia's withdrawal is going to change in terms of the tone of the event?
Well, it definitely opens up a podium spot. So it changes everything because before, you know, at the Olympics, everyone knew what one and two would pretty much be guaranteed. I don't think anyone can compete with the top two Russian girls. So now that they're one of them isn't there, that's another spot in the podium, and that's what the game is all about, getting a medal. So definitely changes things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned the two Russian women there at the Olympics. Medvedeva was one of them. Of course, Alina Zagitova, the Olympic champion. She's no doubt going to be the Olympic, the overwhelming favorite for the title at Worlds. And if she does that, you know, it's going to be a remarkable undefeated debut senior season for her, which is just insane if you think about where she was at the beginning of the season, being like, oh, maybe she has a medal possibility right at the Olympics. But now that she's Olympic champion, it's a little bit crazy. But for me, what's promising about her too is that her technique is really sound. And she's
so good.
Yeah. And she's a skater who launches into her jumps. I mean, we've seen younger skaters in the past who can't kind of make the adjustment through, you know, growth, through, you know, body changes, whatever it is during their teenage years, and they don't end up sustaining this consistency because their jumps were more relying on, you know, them being quick and rotational rather than big and jumpy, which is what Alina Zagitova's jumps actually are. So I don't see that stopping her anytime soon, especially not in Milan, right?
Well, and what's interesting about her all season is that you saw her adjust from competition to competition, even though she won every event. You saw her make mistakes in how she adjusted from even just from short to long in each event, what she did differently and her game plan and how she was able to learn every second of every competition. And that's what makes a great athlete. It's not just being able to go out and skate clean, especially at 15 when you're not thinking about a lot. You're just like, I love skating. I'm going to go do it, right? She really, really adjusted every competition, and you could see her growth from like Grand Prix one to the Olympic champion. Yeah. And I think that that's going to go a long way in the next few years to see what she can do with it.
Yeah, I look back at the Olympics, and her short program this season has been the one place where she's made the mistake the most. And she was very much free and just kind of doing everything that an Olympic champion should be doing in the short program. Her free skate was actually a little bit tight, right? Like she, in that opening combo, that was where, you know, things could have gone way south for her, but she got it back together and she figured it out.
Yeah. And I mean, for her, I mean, it's the same thing, right? You saw her be able to learn and adjust in the middle of a program. In her long at the Olympics, she was able to, she had a moment of like, uh-oh, and instantly figured out how to fix it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she just really soaks in experience every time she competes, and she's only 15. So I can't imagine, you know, where she goes from here, being able to constantly adjust and learn.
Yeah, killer instinct there. So looking at the medal contenders, who do you think are going to be contending for those two spots, assuming that Alina is, of course, one of the ones on the podium?
I think that's a safe assumption. I would say Satoko Miyahara and Caitlin Osmond again. I think hopefully she'll take the momentum from the Olympics. She had a great all-around competition in the team event and as well as the individual. And I think both of them will be the safest bet for second and third.
Yeah, Caitlin Osmond, that fantastic competition in Pyeongchang. Less so in the team event, but she figured it out for the individual event. There's something about that confidence that she showed there that I think is going to really bode well for her. There's something about the way that she skated that free skate that I don't think I've seen that kind of knowledge that, like, okay, I'm going to hit my jumps like she did there, which was just really great to see.
Well, and now she has that confidence saying, I can do a long program.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good now, right? Yeah. Sometimes you're just getting over that hump one time is all you need. And then a switch goes off, switches in your head, and you're just like, okay, I can do longs now.
Yeah,
and
exactly. I mean, she's really got the best shot at making a run for the world title, to be perfectly honest.
I completely agree with that. She was personally my favorite. The Russian girls, you're just like in awe. You're stunned by them. I love watching them because they are so impressive. But Caitlin Osmond was equally so, just kind of, I think, just wasn't in the conversation with them. But her long program at the Olympics was utterly beautiful. I mean, it was just stunning to watch. That program was great, especially when she skated it clean. You could really see everything that you have been waiting for all season, performed the way she wanted to do it, and she was really good.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, she's technically got a disadvantage to Zagitova because of the bonus, because of Zagitova's triple lutz triple loop combination, which gives her a couple extra points both in the short and the free skate. And so, you know, where Caitlin's going to need the judges to give her, cut her a little bit more slack is in the components. You know, for me, she should be scored higher in components than Zagitova just because of the way that they skate.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, it just, the gap just was not enough in the short program and the free skate for the Olympics. That said, now that she's got the Olympic bronze medal, you might see a bit of, you know, that Olympic bronze medal boost on her components.
Yeah.
And you wonder if anything is going to make up for that technical deficit. But, you know, if Alina makes any mistakes, or if Caitlin, and if Caitlin, you know, kind of skates lights out, there is a shot, but it's a very long shot still.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to see how people come off of an Olympic win or medal and then do worlds after. A lot of the times, you know, whoever wins the Olympics won't do worlds because it's kind of hard to come off of that big win and feel like you can do it again.
Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to see how both of them handle that, actually, because for Osmond, it was a win for her. I mean, she won the team event and she medaled in an extremely difficult ladies event. It'll be very interesting because they're both there to see how they handle that.
Yeah. You mentioned Satoko Miyahara. She's very much in the mix. World silver medalist 3 years ago, so she knows how to win a world medal. And, you know, she seems to have gotten her consistency back after the injury last year and then, mm-hmm. you know, that whole thing with her calcium deficiency and all that kind of stuff that just kind of made her season a little bit, you know, just unknown what she was going to do. So, you know, fourth at the Olympics, that's got to be a strong sign for her.
Yeah. And I mean, she had a nice strong build throughout the whole season. She got better at every competition. She was wonderful at the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that she didn't medal. I mean, that shows how strong the event was, especially in the top, you know, top four were all so, so good. And so she's probably pretty hungry for it.
That top four is probably the best top four I've ever seen at the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because a lot of the previous Olympics, it's been like the top two have been outstanding and there's a rivalry between them. And then third place is like, okay, they did they're okay. And then, and then, you know, it kind of drops off.
Yeah.
This year, every event at the Olympics didn't drop off. They were all the most depth I've ever seen at an Olympics.
Yeah.
In every discipline. So.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then you've got Carolina Costner skating at home. What might be her last Worlds and her last competition? Who knows? She hasn't said anything to that effect, but you have to think that her comeback was with the goal of the Olympic season. You know, she's had a long road. I mean, it's been, what, 15, 16 years since her first senior international event. So you have to think that at home in Italy, at a World Championships, that may be time for her to call it quits, and that might have been her choreography of her career all along.
Yeah. I mean, I think Carolina, you know, she's capable of doing a great short. She just can't quite technically hang with the other ones in the long program. I think being at home will definitely be meaningful, and she's a skater who meaning and creativity and that whole idea of what skating is all about to her is so special.
Yeah.
So that will definitely affect her being at home, because she's the type of skater that's what she kind of skates for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to expect from her. I think that it's just hard because the top three or four are just really hard to compete with.
Yeah.
At this point in her career.
Yeah. I think Carolina, the biggest factor for her is going to be stamina in that free skate. It was surprising in a ways to see her struggle in the short program at the mm-hmm. Olympics. So, you know, if she puts down a good short at Worlds, she's going to be in the mix. But if we look at the list here, two of the top six at the Olympics won't be there. We talked about Yevgenia Medvedeva already. Kari Sakamoto, who's six at the Olympics, won't be in Milan. The Japan Federation had made that decision right after Nationals that she was going to get assigned to the Olympics, and Wakaba Higuchi was going to get assigned to Worlds. And so, you know, this wasn't a surprise, and Higuchi's been staying in competition form. She just won a smaller competition a couple weeks ago, so she looks solid there. What do you think her outlook's going to be?
I love Wakaba Higuchi. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I was blown away when I saw her at Cup of China this year. I was like, who is this girl? She's exciting. She's a little bit different from the other Japanese girls, in my opinion.
Yep.
And I was really excited when I saw that she was going to be at Worlds. I think that she could have a really big impact. I think depending on it kind of depends on how she skates. But she's impressive. She's got big jumps. She's really fast. She's exciting to watch. And she kind of brings something different than all of the other girls. She's actually kind of almost the opposite of Satoko Miyahara. Mm-hmm. They're like very different from each other. Everything that's great about Satoko, you know, is that she's like so delicate and perfect. But her jumps are a little small, but very consistent. And then Wakaba's kind of the opposite. She jumps huge. She's fast. She's a little bit more in your face as far as her skating style goes. So
yep.
It'll be cool to see them both there together. And I don't know, she could really make a... little bit of a push there.
Yeah.
So
totally agreed. I mean, very much a powerhouse. And speaking of powerhouses, we can't forget about Gabby Dailman.
Yeah.
Actually, the defending world bronze medalist. She had a nightmare free skate at the Olympics, but a lot of people are pulling for her to have a redeeming world championships.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I am a big fan of her skating. I love her aggressive style. And I like that she's a little bit free in what she says and does off the ice. I think it's good for the sport. I was super disappointed in her free skate at the Olympics. It almost looked like she gave up a little bit, which was tough to watch. But I'm hoping that like feisty attitude will come back and she'll be ready to like kind of give it all she has. I mean, she was great in the team event. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just hard. Having that team event really changes the Olympics. And it's kind of hard. It's a different beast, the Olympics altogether. You know, she might be more comfortable at Worlds coming in something a little bit like, not the same as far as the hype is concerned, and just kind of come in and have a good end to the season.
I really go back to that Olympics and I wonder what happened in her mind after that team event, because she skated a really good free skate, probably one of her best free skates ever. And
yeah.
And
I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah. And,
could not have been any better.
You're right. And she looked at that score and she was probably thinking, okay, well, I'm going to get like a 140 something, right? And yeah. She ends up getting a 136 or something like that. And I wonder if that messed with her mind a little bit, because it was something that it was a surprise. Like she gave it the best that she could have gotten and the score was not where she thought she was going to be. And then, you know, going into the individual event, it's like, okay, what am I going to do? Right.
Yeah. And I think you saw that in the short when she messed up her signature jump, yeah. the triple toe. And then from there, it was just a mind game of being uncomfortable. She looked uncomfortable. Yeah. She looked like she wasn't quite sure how aggressive she should be. Should she hold back? What, you know, it was just, again, it's a different beast, the Olympics, and having to do both those events and so much time in between. It's really, everyone handles it differently.
Right.
And I don't think there's no way of practicing that event because it's only every 4 years and there's no simulation for it. So it's really tough.
Well, any way you look at it, she's still an Olympic gold medalist. So
she is.
Hopefully she can get some of that feistiness back, like you said. But the U.S. women are going to be, I think, are going to be X factors. Mariah Nagasu, Brady Tennell, and Karen Chen. None of them had a great time in the individual event at the Olympics. Mariah, of course, had a career free skate in the team event. Brady had a clean short program in the team event. They both got the team bronze. You wonder with a few weeks of training after the Olympics under the belt, what's going to happen with them at Worlds.
I was shocked that Brady didn't skate clean.
Right?
I think it was more shocking that she didn't skate clean than Nathan, honestly. It was probably the biggest surprise of the Olympics for me. I think she'll be fine. I think with Brady, it really, hopefully she'll be back to her normal, consistent Brady that we know and love from, 3 months that we've known and loved her. But I think that her result always depends on everyone else. If she's great, she has a shot, depending on who messes up.
Yeah.
And then for Mariah, I would love to see her go out with a bang as far as finishing a great season for her and a really powerful, meaningful season. I would love to see that again. I mean, I just really want to see another triple axel landed in competition. It's so cool. It's huge. It's beautiful. I don't care what the rest of the program is, really. I just want to see that. Like, it's awesome. It's awesome to see. And I think that, I mean, she kind of finished the Olympics on a low. They went from a real high to a real low. So I don't know how she'll deal with that. I feel like she's really hard to predict.
Yeah, hard to predict. I mean, after that team event, I mean, there really was a chance that she could have been a factor in the top five, just given the way that she was skating, given the momentum that she had. And whatever it was, I mean, it started sort of just going awry in practice the last couple of days before the start of the individual event, and who knows? I mean, it very well could have been that she was just maybe a little bit overtrained at that point, overpracticed. Mm-hmm. But you know, she's had time to kind of take herself away from skating with the Oscars, with all the media and publicity mm-hmm. that she's had after the Olympics. So you do wonder where she's going to be, and you know, when was the last time she did a triple axel in practice? We don't know, right? So we will have to see what happens with her next week. Very much next factor. But yeah, a few more big names to think about for the top 10. Dabin Choi, Maria Sotskova, Stanislava Konstantinova, who's replacing Medvedeva after her withdrawal. But, you know, we're missing some of the big names, but it's still going to be a great event. But speaking of the great big names, over to the pairs. Two of the three medalists won't be in Milan. So silver medalists Wenjing Sui and Song Han and bronze medalists Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford have both withdrawn. Megan and Eric never really intended to be at Worlds anyway. So, you know, that Olympics was very likely. I mean, unless something drastic happens, it's their last competition, and what a way to go out. Sui and Han, you know, after the last couple of seasons, they they very much are committing to go for another 4 years. And, you know, being that the Olympics are in Beijing in 4 years, it's a lot of motivation there for them. Mm-hmm. They decided to withdraw because Sui has a fracture in her foot. So what does this do to open up that field in Milan?
Well, two spots of the podium just opened up. So I think it opens up some redemption for the Russians, Tarasova and Morozov.
Yeah.
And it also opens up a spot for two of the teams who have been kind of making a push all season as our dark horses, James and Cypre and Marquet and Hodorek. I think it gives them a chance to maybe be able to get a medal at Worlds, which they probably wouldn't have had these two teams been there for sure. And even with one, I don't think that they would have been able to get third over the Russians. Even if the Russians aren't great, it seems that they're going to stay in that top three or four. So it really does change the look of the event quite a bit.
You mentioned James and Cypre and Marquet and Hotarek. It's either of them gets on the podium, it's going to be their very first time on the world podium. And really anybody else who gets on the podium will be their first time on the podium at Worlds, with the exception of Hao Zhang, but he would be there with a new partner, right? So it really does open up a huge field of possibilities, whereas a bunch of these pairs could be on that podium. It's got to be very much a motivational factor.
Well, yeah, and the pairs event is so deep that the fact that those two teams aren't there makes it really exciting, because it could be quite a few different teams could take that spot. It makes it really fun to watch, because I mean, even some of the other Canadian teams could step up to that spot. Mm-hmm. The other Chinese team, I mean, there are really so many strong pair teams that it could be anyone's game.
Well, the Russian team, Tarasova and Morozov, you were talking about earlier, they had
maybe they'll get a new free skate for Worlds.
Oh boy, Candyman. they've really got to be thinking about a comeback, right? I mean, to be perfectly honest, like if there's anybody who has a shot at that world title over Eliana and Bruno, it's got to be them. I mean, they have the elements for it.
I don't think they can with that free skate. If Sui and Han can't beat Bruno and Eliana,
I don't think anybody can beat a perfect Eliana and Bruno. It's a question of whether or not they make mistakes again.
Yeah.
So that's the big one.
Going into that free skate at the Olympics, her hair was wilted. She looked tired. You could just tell, like, she had no bounce. She had no curls in her hair like normal. For Candyman, you have to have curls in your hair. Like, you can't have wilted hair. But they you could tell the minute they got on the ice that they weren't going to be good. And you could tell the minute they got on the ice for the short and the team event that they were going to win it. I texted Tanith Belvin, White, and I said, I said, as soon as they stepped on the ice, they're going to win the short for the team event. They hadn't even started skating yet. And I texted her that, and they did. They were great.
Yeah.
You can see it with those two. You can tell, you know, what's going to happen. They just looked off at the Olympics with each other in the long program. They didn't even look like they wanted to like be out there together. So I'm curious to see how they bounce back from that. I think they'll do a great short. I think that's pretty much a given. It's not hard for them. It's just that long program. It's not good.
Yeah. It's also that quad twist is always an indicator. And you saw the quad twist from them at the Olympics be just a hair off, and they had a bit of a collision on the
hair off. You see, you just said it. Was that pun intended?
No, it wasn't. Oh man!
But it's true. Like, that's why, you know, is it worth doing a quad twist? Because it is so draining to do even a triple twist, and to do a quad, if the twist is off even a little bit, and this is, you know, something that's so hard, I think, for anyone but a pair skater to understand. And this is why the twist is the hardest element. If it is off, it's really hard to get your timing back on. And it kind of like, you kind of get deflated because the energy is just gone and your timing's a little off. It's really hard to get it back.
Right. I think for them too, especially because she doesn't rotate as fast as an Alexa Kinnearum does, or as Wenjing Sui does. Like, her quad twist is a little bit delayed, which makes it so much more energy draining when they have that catch. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so who knows? Who knows what they're going to do? I would imagine they're going to keep it in because that they want to show that they're yeah. still kind of pushing the boundaries. I'm looking to them to have a redeeming world and be on that podium again. So, mm-hmm. but, you know, we talked about the field outside of those two pairs, James and Cyprès, Marquet and Hotarek, and then a whole bunch of other pairs coming up as well. But with the Americans, Alexa and Chris will be there after their team bronze at the Olympics. And unfortunately, a disappointing 15th individually, they had such a high in the team event. But they'll be joined by Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea. And so for our listeners who are wondering why the U.S. gets one spot at the Olympics and two spots at Worlds, the two spots at the Olympics were actually mathematically earned at last year's Worlds. And that's why there were two pairs in Milan. But there was a quota in place for the Olympics whereby only 16 spots are given out at Worlds, and the U.S. qualified the number 16th and 17th spots, so one of them had to be cut. So with Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea, they're coming in a lot of ways fresh. You know, they didn't have the Olympics. They had four continents, which they won, and it's been a resurgence season for them. And so you have to think about them as a pair who could possibly make some waves, especially, you know, kind of among the with the U.S. pairs scenarios going forward in the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that them and Semeca, Kinnearum and Kinnearum are by far, they're the top two teams in the U.S. that should be pushed for the next 4 years. I'm curious to see with Tara and Danny how they look, not compared to other U.S. teams, but on the world stage. Sometimes what looks great at nationals tends to look not as good in an international competition, especially like this one where the depth is so deep. Alexa and Chris, you know, they tend to, even if they don't skate great, at least their element to element matches up with these other teams and in a lot of ways are better. And same with their component. Unfortunately, like you have to skate better in this field when everyone skated great. But with Tara and Danny, you know, their throws are a bit smaller. Their speed isn't quite the same. Their twist isn't great. But they are very consistent. So I'm curious to see, you know, it's hard to know until you start seeing them consistently compete at the world level where they'll be able to push
yeah.
in.
Well, what's different about this year with them is that they've only been at two international events. One of them was Golden Spin and the other one was Four mm-hmm. Continents. At neither of those events were the very top pairs there. So you can't, it's tough to compare them and the improvements that they've made this season too, with the top teams because it hasn't happened yet. So that mm-hmm. will be an interesting one. And I think there's something to be said potentially about consistency. If they can skate two clean programs, it's going to make a bit of a difference.
Yeah. And I think they need to start getting experience going to Worlds every year. You know, the longer you're around, I mean, five Olympics it took for someone to win, right, to make it to the top. The longer you're around, especially with dance and pairs, you need to be seen at all of these events. The more you're seen, you can, like, your score goes up a little bit and a little bit and a little bit more. So, you know, I don't know exactly what to expect at this Worlds, but they need to be seen at Worlds every year for the next 4 years in order to kind of make their mark for the next yeah. Olympics.
So much to be said about consistency kind of in all different arenas. But, mm-hmm. well, this is a very spirited preview with you, Brooke.
Always.
As always, love your insights.
Spirited, I yes. like that. I like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. But I'll be looking forward to your live tweeting next week in Milan. You're going to be doing that, right?
I will live tweet just for you, Jackie. I will
do it. Fantastic. Love it.
I only have like two followers, though. I think you and Nick.
For everybody out there, go follow Brooke Castile on Twitter.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. Looking forward to more skating next week. Thanks, Brooke.
Yeah. Thank you, Jackie.
Hi, this is Caitlin Osmond, three-time Olympic medalist, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
She is fresh off of not one, but two Olympic medals in Pyeongchang, a team gold for Canada, and then an individual bronze medal in the ladies event. I am talking about Caitlin Osmond, ladies and gentlemen, who is joining me today for her second appearance on Ice Talk. Caitlin, welcome back. And have you come down from the high of the Olympics yet?
Thanks for having me. And I don't even know. My head has been all over the place since I got back. It's been so exciting, but I've been absolutely exhausted. So all over the place.
I know you're in Toronto right now doing some choreography with Stars on Ice. Tell me a little bit about what this week's been like for you.
This week has been busy. I was in Edmonton training earlier this week, getting ready for Worlds. And this weekend I'm spending it working with Jeffrey Buttle on choreography. And it's been pretty exciting so far. I'm excited for this program, and it's exciting to be doing something different leading up to the Worlds a bit.
Yeah, Jeff Buttle, of course, did your free skate and your short program. Did he do your short program?
Just my free skate. Just Lance free skate. Vipont did my short.
That's right. Lance Vipont did the short program. But you know Jeff well after working with him on that free skate.
Yes.
Well, three-time Olympic medalist. Now, one gold, one silver, one bronze. You have the whole collection. Mm-hmm. How does that sound? How does that feel?
It's crazy. I never thought that it was ever a possibility to have one Olympic medal, let alone three. And the team event medals were so exciting to be on a podium with a team, being like a family up there. A lot of us had the goal for the team gold, and we put all our effort into it. But my individual medal is definitely something I'm proud of. It's a medal that I never thought would ever be possible. I never thought I'd be at the Olympics, let alone standing on the podium. And it's still hard to believe that I was.
I mean, it's got to be so surreal. We'll talk about the team event and the individual event a little bit later on in the interview, but wanted to just have you think about PyeongChang as, like, in general, looking back at that experience. And you were also, I think, in Incheon for some time between the team event and the individual event. What were your favorite non-skating things that you did in South Korea, if you did any of it at all?
I don't know. There was a lot of skating things having to be done.
Yeah.
I didn't have very much opportunities to get out and watch much sports or watch many events or even look around all that much. I am very, very much in my little bubble when I'm competing. But when I was in Incheon, I did try to get out of my hotel one day. I went shopping a little bit. There's a Central Park next to my hotel, so I walked around there. I went to a pet cafe, which was so much fun. There was dogs running around, and I could get coffee. So it was like two of the best things ever.
I missed the pet cafes. I did not get to go to any of those.
It was pretty great. And then just in PyeongChang itself, I spent a lot of time in our athletes' lounge in the village, and I just got to hang out with a lot of athletes there, the Canadian athletes especially. And it was just fun. We just sat around watching. Often we were watching Friends, actually, but usually there were sports on in the background also.
So the lounge was just playing Friends the entire time. Is that what happened?
Well, during the middle of the day, there was very little sports to be played. It was either in the morning or
at night.
That's
true.
Yep. It was a break. So during that break, we all watched Friends.
Watching Friends with friends, drinking coffee, right?
It was great.
That's the way to go. Well, it has somehow been 2 weeks since the Olympics ended. I'm not sure how it's only been 2 weeks because it seems like such a long time ago. you were there from start to finish in Korea. What have the 2 weeks after that been like? Have you been doing a lot of media, a lot of sponsor obligations? I know you're doing Stars on Ice right now. When were you able to get back into training? How has the last 2 weeks been?
It has been incredibly busy. I can't believe it's been 2 weeks. It feels like, it feels like yesterday that I was in Korea, but also it feels like a year ago.
Yep.
I don't really know how to explain that.
Yep.
But there has been a lot of media. There's been a lot of celebrations amongst my friends and my family, and my skating club set off a celebration also. But there's been at least a couple of medias a day, and then I got back to training on the Thursday that I came home. I came home on Monday, and I started training again on Thursday.
So last week.
Last week. And yeah, it's just been busy training, busy incorporating that with media, and now I'm in Toronto working on Stars on Ice, and that'll be just back and doing more training until I leave on the 17th.
Yeah, the time between the Olympics and Worlds has to be a little bit insane. It's unlike anything else, right? It's unlike anything else that you probably are used to.
Yeah, it's really fast, but at the same time, that's the way that I've been training my competitions all year. They've all been with this little gap in between. Just usually there's not this much excitement
happening. Usually there's not an Olympic medal or two Olympic medals to have excitement about. Well, you've now had a little bit of distance away from Korea and then also a lot of distance away from Sochi 4 years ago. Reflecting back on those two times, how were your two Olympic experiences different from each other? Or were they?
They were very different. When I was in Sochi, I was only 18 and I was new to the international world. I had no expectations on me while I was competing. No one knew how I was going to be placing. I didn't know any of the other athletes in the village, and I just kind of hid out in my room and just slept for the entire competition, pretty much, other than when I was on the ice. So I was just almost shy and intimidated by everything going on around me. This time, it was very different. I've known these people for numerous years. There was so many faces that I recognized, just being able to walk around the village and feeling more comfortable to talk to people. I ventured out of my room and didn't sleep through an entire 3 weeks, so I was at least awake for my competitions. And then obviously I was going in as a medal contender, and I wanted to be able to skate well enough to fight for that medal. So both experiences were both sides of a coin. They were all over the place.
Yeah, and of course, the difference there being Sochi was your second senior season internationally, and then here you were the reigning world silver medalist. So you know, it does make a little bit of a difference for your preparation going in, right?
It definitely feels different, and as a skater, I just feel stronger and definitely more mature on the ice than I was at 18.
Yeah. Well, 4 years have passed since your first Olympics, and now with two medals in your second Olympics. I wanted to take you back a couple of years to that broken leg, that season right after your first Olympics in 2014. You've said before that it took time, and it took a lot of convincing, and it took a lot of, you know, your coach Ravi, while you're having to kind of play tricks on you to get back that drive to compete, that like love for figure skating. Talk me through that entire process of coming back from the injury to getting to where you are now.
Time is definitely the best way to explain it. I was scared more than anything. I was exhausted trying to come back from injuries. I just felt like up to that point, I was just always fighting to stay healthy. And then the minute I would get somewhere in skating, I would get injured again and have to step back. So I was just tired of continuously trying to push that and fighting against myself and competing against my own body instead of competing against competitors that I wanted. And it was really hard. And it did take a lot of time for me to realize that I started skating for the fun of it. I didn't start skating to be a top competitor at competitions. I just wanted to skate. So that's what Ravi did for me, is that when I was struggling to figure out if I wanted to skate or if I even could skate, he just brought me back in doing club shows, teaching seminars with him, just traveling around trying to stay out of the practice world and trying to perform as much as I could to figure out why I started skating to begin with. That's when everything started to fall into place. I was okay practicing again. And when competitions started happening, it just went all back downhill. My first year competing after being injured, it was just a complete roller coaster. I felt like I was always training to skate good and then go to competitions and forget what I was supposed to do. And it wasn't until the end of that year when I didn't regain my national title, I didn't make the world team, just all of those things combined, I just sat down, and that's when everything finally just clicked. I was like, I'm not going to put myself through all this practice to not be excited when I finish a competition. And that's when I sat down with Ravi and we decided what we were going to do to be good again. I started working with a sports psychologist full time, and Ravi and I have been just training super hard, and that's where everything has come since then.
I remember that first season back, it was 2015, right? 15. Yeah.
15 leading into 16.
That's right. Yeah. So 2015 Skate Canada was that first competition back. And I remember...
Technically, I did Oberstdorf, and I won Oberstdorf, so...
Yeah.
Won that one, and yeah. Then it went downhill from there.
That's right. Yeah, and I remember it just seemed like so much of it was about your head playing games with the rest of you. Like, you had the elements back already. I remember that Nebelhorn trophy, you skated really well, and then you came into Skate Canada. I was like, okay, well, she's back, right?
I belly flopped on a flying camel.
Exactly. So you literally landed your triple flip, triple toe, and then your triple lutz, and then you had that slip on the entrance of the flying camel, and the rest of the competition just like completely fell through the ice, basically.
Nothing else that event.
Yeah. I mean, you were just talking about how that season was such a roller coaster. And you didn't qualify for Worlds, and it was maybe, what, like, within, like, a couple points that you didn't qualify for Worlds, right? Point one. point one, two, yeah. So...
You finished third.
Tell me about working with a sports psychologist, actually. I mean, and how that has affected your, you know, basically the last two seasons.
When I first started with her, we found the biggest thing is the fear that I had that my body wasn't going to be able to do what I wanted it to. I was scared that I wasn't going to perform well in competition, which made me skate worse. I was scared of re-injuring myself, and it just took a lot of talking and coming up with different techniques and focusing skills and everything to just get that fear out of me and just to risk it. And that's been one of the biggest leading things. And then it was just how to approach practice every day with the focus that I would have in competitions, coming up with keywords that I had to think of to keep me in the moment and while I was competing, what to do when I'm backstage waiting to go onto the ice, how to stay focused, how to keep the attention on myself and not getting wrapped up with everything around me, and how to deal with the nerves. When I came back from being injured, I got nervous for my first time in my entire life. I didn't know how to deal with it until she just told me. She's like, just accept whatever you're feeling that day, because you're never going to feel the same at any event. You could feel nervous. You could feel excited. You could feel completely on, or like you're not even in the rink. You just have to accept that's how you feel and deal with it, pretty much.
Yeah. Easier said than done, right?
It is. It definitely is easier said than done. But once you have the mentality of it, your body will eventually clue into what you're thinking. Eventually.
I wish I had that mentality when I skated. But what was the original broken leg? What actually happened to when you had that injury?
It was a silly mistake. Complete fluke accident. I was doing choreography, working on my choreography for a brand new program, and I was just doing a bracket on my left foot, of all things.
Wow.
I was doing a bracket on my left foot. I saw someone coming, so I put my right foot down to stop, and it just snapped.
Oh, gosh. That's rough. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard the actual story behind that injury. A little crazy.
Yeah, no one actually saw it happen. I managed to see a security tape of it afterwards, because no one came clean and said they got in my way. And no one saw anyone get in my way. And I was like, am I like losing my mind? I was skating in a mall, so there's a lot of shadows going around sometimes. So I was like, maybe I saw a shadow broke my leg because of the shadow. But who knows?
Oh, man. and maybe that injury could have been the best thing that could have ever happened to you, right?
In hindsight now, it definitely has been.
Yeah. For sure. Well, you had a couple of firsts this season. First time medaling at the Grand Prix final.
Yep.
And then a first Canadian silver medal when you were favored for the gold medal. How did you use that bit of obstacle as motivation for the Olympics?
Well, being in first numerous times after the short program this year, up until nationals, I was unbeaten in my short program this year. Up to that point at the competition of France, I fell to third after my long. At the Grand Prix final, I fell to third after my long program. And then at nationals, I didn't win the short program for the first time in my entire senior career. My first time senior, I won the short program. So it was almost a shock to my system when I fell on my opening jump of a short, which never happens.
Yep.
And I placed second, which was something very new to me. at Nationals. And I was really determined for my long program because I was skating so well in practice. I was skating even better at the competition practices. I was skating clean programs. Leading up to the competition, my both short and my long were as strong as they ever have been. And when I started my long program, I felt like I was invincible and that nothing was going to stop me until halfway through my program when I started making mistakes. And it frustrated me more, not the fact that I didn't win, and that is okay. I have that put behind me. Gabby skated amazing at Nationals, so I knew I had to skate my best to be able to compete against that, and I didn't. But when I got home, I'm like, okay, something that we were doing is not right. So after Nationals, I was determined to fix that long program to make it consistent and to guarantee that I was going to do it in competition. I trained even harder. We changed a bit of my training. I was in shape, but we just got more in shape. And then mentally, we also refocused my program, and we realized that I was in the best shape that I've ever been in my entire life. I was the strongest I've ever been. And I didn't have to worry about the second half of my long program. I wasn't tired. I had the stamina for it, and I had to approach it the way I approached the beginning of my program. I couldn't shy away from it. And then we changed a little bit of the technique on my loop and just guaranteed that the techniques were as good as I could get on all my jumps. And everything just seemed to fall right into place. Everything was working even better than they were before Worlds. And when I got to Olympics, I was motivated and ready.
Let's talk a little bit about the team event, right? Your team event short program didn't go exactly the way you would have liked it to go. I asked you about this in the press conference after your individual short program where you skated so well. And I'd love for you to go back to that time. You had a couple weeks to basically hit the reset button between your team short and your individual short. What did you do? What did you tell yourself during that time to get back on track?
After not having the best skate at Nationals in my short, and then going into the team event and making the mistake on my first jump yet again, I was mad and I didn't want that to happen. I was skating good shorts. That short's been my rock in the last 2 years. And when I went back to practice after the team event, I had already had the feeling of being on the podium in the team event, and I wanted to be back up on that podium, my individual. So when I went back to Seoul, when I went to Incheon, I went back to my regular training. I took it the same focus that I do at home and went back to Pyeongchang as if it was a brand new event. And I was ready, and I just had to keep reminding myself that I could do this program and I wanted to perform it well, which gave me a lot of confidence for it.
What did you think about being able to get away from the Olympics, really? I mean, you were in Incheon. Not all of the skaters had the kind of advantage, or maybe some people might say it's a disadvantage of not being on Olympic ice all the time. How was that motivating for you? How did that change how you viewed your Olympics there?
I'm so happy that I got out of the village for a little while. There's a constant buzz and hype and excitement that's going on around the village. When you're on competition practice ice, it's almost like competing every day. You're always trying to put on a show, and it can get really exhausting. So I was excited that I was able to get away from all of that.
And you've got people like me tracking your jumps and tweeting them on.
And then I get really interested, and then I read everything. So I get even more into it. And that's not the way I train at home. So I wanted to be sure that I could go into my individual event feeling as prepared as I could. And that was the best way I could.
Well, of course, that team event was super important because I know Team Canada really put a lot of effort into getting that gold medal. I remember Scott Moyer talking about having the strategy of bringing the best Canadian team to the table. Everything was like, we're going to go for that gold medal. How are you guys different than what you were in 2014 with the team event?
For me, I feel like I approached the competition the same. I knew in Sochi it was my best shot on being able to get a medal, so I put a lot of my energy into the team event. But as a team, we've grown closer over the last couple of years, and we all wanted this for each other. and we did take it much more in a strategic way. We knew more of what to expect with it being the second time the team event has been in the Olympics instead of the first where no one knows what to expect. So we took it very seriously and we all wanted it for each other, and we all put a lot of heart and soul into the team event to get it together.
Oh, very cool. Well, that short program that you've said is very much a rock for you is a revisit to last season's short program. You originally had a new short earlier in the season to Summertime. How did you come to that decision to make the switch?
Originally, after Worlds last year, we were debating on keeping my short program because it was such a solid program. A lot of people were wanting to see it again. It was always exciting for me to skate, but I knew if I skated it over the entire summer, I would have hated it by the time I competed again. I like different characters, I like different stories, and training a program for 2 years is really hard for me. So we tried Summertime, and we tried to come up with something completely new to see which one would be better. And we said that at the end of the summer, we'll decide which program we feel more comfortable with. So after our high performance camp, beginning of September, end of August, I skated a clean program there, and Ravi and I decided the minute that I was finished that clean program that the program just wasn't right for this year. I wanted something solid. I wanted something I was confident in, and that program had brought so many special memories that I just wanted to be sure that I was competing at the Olympics with my best programs.
If I remember correctly, you had the Lutz and the Axle in the second half in that program, right? Was that an issue of being comfortable with the layout of those jumps?
No, I was very comfortable with the layout of the jumps. It was choreographed in the second half because musically it looked better. I had landed it numerous times. I landed it at the high performance camp. And day by day, I was getting more and more comfortable with it. But it wasn't the right program.
Yeah. Well, we know your short program well, very, very well now. Your free skate is new this season to Swan Lake and Black Swan. For me, I've really seen this program just grow kind of leaps and bounds throughout the season. Your portrayal of the character has grown. I'd love for you to explain the storyline of the character that you're playing and just like the arc of the entire program to our listeners.
Black Swan is by far my favorite program that I've ever gotten to compete. It's dramatic and it's a piece of music that I wanted to skate to Swan Lake as a kid, but Swan Lake didn't really fit my skating style as much as the darker Black Swan did. And when I heard Black Swan and I saw the movie, I knew that was a story that I wanted to tell on the ice. So this year, when I finally got to do it, I was so excited, and Jeff was excited, and he put choreography the exactly way I wanted, the story exactly the way I wanted it. And we are telling the story, of Black Swan from the movie, not the ballet. And it's really a battle of oneself between the white swan, who is meant to be naive and innocent and always striving for perfection, making sure every line is perfect, making sure everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be, but it doesn't get the attention that she wants from the people that need to get the attention from. And then the Black Swan comes in and she's more free. She has that evil side. She's seductive and just more dramatic, and everything might not be perfect, but it just looks so much better amongst everything. And in the end, she realized that she had to become both the white swan with the perfection, but also have the freedom of the black swan to be able to have the performance and be the person that she wanted to be.
Well, let's go back to your free skate at the Olympics. For me, and I've batted this round a little bit, but for me, the pivotal moment of that program was when you stepped out of your triple Lutz. And I remember tweeting that might have been the best thing that could have happened to you at that point, because I mean, in a lot of ways, what you were talking about just now about like it not having to be perfection, that's exactly what happened, right? You stepped out. It wasn't a major error, but you didn't have to deal with the pressure of perfection at that point. What were you thinking? Tell me about that point in the program, because that's the point of your program where you get that break between the Lutz and the loop and you have time to think. Like, what were you thinking at that point, or were you not thinking at all?
That is something that I've been very focused on ever since leading into last year's Worlds is that perfection doesn't exist. No matter how much you fight for it, you're not going to get it. So the minute you start aiming for excellence instead of for perfection, it allows for that little mistake that will let you relax during a program. And when I made the mistake on the Lutz, I was skating so well up to that moment. I felt so strong. Each landing felt like nothing could break me. Someone could try to push me and I'd still stay on my foot. And I made a mistake on a Lutz, which I don't usually make. And when I was in my spins, I was just thinking, I was like, I'm not going to let this program fall apart. I know I could do it. It felt good. I was ready. And that's what I was thinking throughout my spins. And when I started the choreography for the second half of my program, I wasn't going to let any mistake happen. It made me stay in myself. It didn't let me get over my head. And like you said, it probably was for the better because I had made that mistake. I got it out of my system and I just could skate the rest of my program freely.
Amazing. Well, I mean, tell me about that relationship with your triple loop. We know it's not a jump that, I mean, it's the jump that you generally have no trouble with in practice, but then it kind of tells the tale for your free skates. Have you made friends with that triple loop yet?
I love triple loops. I hated them as a kid. I could never compete with them. I couldn't even land one. My double loops were terrifying. It wasn't until I broke my leg that I figured out how to do a triple loop, mainly because I could only jump on the other leg. Therefore, a triple loop was the only jump I could do. But you've seen majority of my practices. It's a very rare miss if I'm going to triple loop.
Right.
I've done a triple loop for 3 years on Stars on Ice, in galas. Once again, I rarely miss them. So I can do them in spotlights. But for some reason, when it came to competition, I couldn't seem to land it. It was always in my head. Something just didn't feel right. And the only thing that I can think of is that loops, you had to be so relaxed and you have to just trust it. And halfway through a competition, that's a little hard to do.
Yeah.
But I think I finally figured it out. I landed it a few times this year. I landed it at my summer events. I stepped out of it at nationals. I finally landed it as cleanly as I possibly could at Olympics. So I think I've come to peace with it. We did rethink the technique just a little bit just to help me stay focused on the jump and try to stay a bit more relaxed. But mainly I just have to trust that I can do that jump.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I went to watch that program back again and I saw when you finished, you're on your knees and it was like this mix of relief and joy, and I don't know what other emotions were going through your head. Every emotion possible. Do you remember that last minute of your program when you knew that you'd basically done as well as you could have twice in the individual event, and that, like, I mean, you probably were thinking, like, there's an individual Olympic medal in sight, right? What were you thinking?
The minute I landed my axel, I was beyond overjoyed. I knew that was the best skate that I've ever had in competition. I was feeling so much relief that finally everything that I've been working for, all the training that I've done, all the practice that I've put in, finally worked in competition. I finally got to prove to everyone the way I am when I'm home. And that last minute of the program is so dark. It's black swan to a T. It's victorious at the end. And the choreography is my favorite part of the program. And I didn't have to worry about any jumps because they were all done. I couldn't be upset because I did everything that I had done. And I could just fully enjoy that last minute the best I could. I could hear the audience going, but it was almost like a buzz in my brain because my brain was going off like no tomorrow. And when I hit my indie musician, it was a mixed feeling. I was so relieved that everything worked. I was beyond excited. I knew there was a very high possibility that I was still in my third, that I would remain in a third place spot. And it didn't even matter if I podiumed at that point. I was so excited that I was able to do my best skates up to this point at the Olympics. And just, I don't know, even talking to it now, my brain still doesn't know what to think.
I mean, that's the best feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, no rest for the weary. We are now just over a week away from Milano and the World Championships. The field is looking to be the most packed, I think, of any of the four disciplines in terms of the lack of withdrawals.
People are crazy.
The ladies are crazy. What have you been doing in preparation for Worlds?
I've been training the same way that I've been training all year.
It's just like going to Incheon, right?
Just like going to Incheon. Feels the same. A little bit more exhausting. When I got home, I felt so emotionally drained, and it was hard getting back on the ice for the first time. But once I got my feet under me and realized, okay, it's like, no, I need to focus. I have Worlds coming up, and I want to be able to skate good there. I can't end the year on a low note after having an Olympics that high. So I've been just going back to my regular training, doing as much as I can. Training's actually been going really well still, which keeps me happy. And no, I'm just excited for Worlds. I came second last year, and I'm going to fight to stay on the podium again this year.
Well, amazing. Caitlin, excited to see you again for the final event of the season at Worlds. Good luck, and thanks for taking your time for the podcast today.
Thank you.
That was part one of our two-part Worlds preview for Ice Talk. I want to thank Caitlin Osmond and Brooke Castillo for joining me today. Next week, we will have 2016 U.S. champions Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea on the podcast to talk about their second Worlds appearance. And we will finish up our Worlds preview with the men and the ice dance events. And don't forget to watch the World Figure Skating Championships on icenetwork.com next week. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network Studios in downtown Manhattan, I'm Jackie Wong of RockerSkating.com. Stay cool, and I will talk to you again next week.